Welcome to selfdiscoverymedia.com, where the Orchard of Wisdom shows are at your fingertips. It ignites your soul, your heart, your spirit, your mind, and your body with illumination from people who have made the journey before you. They're here now to help you on your journey, on your path of self-discovery. We are funded by you, the audience, and the people we interview. If you wish to support us, please go to selfdiscoverymedia.com and press on our Fund Action button. Anything is appreciated. We would like you to sit back and enjoy the shows. Here we go. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of Raising Our Gifted Children right here on selfdiscoverymedia.com. I'm your host, Sarah Troy, and my guest is Gramps Jeffrey, or otherwise known as Mark Joseph. We're going to be talking about his wonderful book of I Don't Want to Turn Three. And he's a grandfather, his observations of grandchildren, as we were just discussing a moment before the show started, how it is a different approach when you are a grandparent, how you observe things in a different way than you do when you're actually a parent. Why did he write this book? Living in the past year because of the pandemic caused COVID-19 in isolation, except for being with family, giving him special time to watch and interact with the grandkids. What a trip. All six kids have completely different personalities, and the one thing they have in common is a sense of curiosity and how excited they get when they do accomplish something new. Watching them grow year to year and how they interact with each other is the basis for this book. What goes through a toddler's mind that parents are so desperate to understand? When does a toddler understand the difference between me and us? This book explores how the family finds out together. And as a baby boomer, trying to understand how the world has evolved since he was three is also a part of the story. His parents did not have a cell phone or internet or cable, TV. His parents' definition of discipline was quite different to that of parents today. Today's world has made better place for children to grow up in. Well, that's a question mark. He will let you answer that as we weigh up everything here today. Okay, well, yes. It is a very different world, isn't it? I have to say I'm a grandma of an 11 and a half month old, and he's not allowed the phone except we do FaceTime calling, and he's not allowed the TV, and he's read to every single night, and he's even read to through the day, and they're very interactive. So they decided to go back to the basics rather than going some other ways that other parents have done. Welcome to the show, love.
Sarah, I do appreciate you inviting me. What an introduction. I loved it.
Being a grandparent is really cool, isn't it?
Yes, you know, it really is. And what's so interesting is I am convinced that this latest generation, your grandchild's age from 0 to 10, is the greatest generation this world has ever produced. Mm-hmm. And then there's lots of reasons. One is it's the first generation that is entirely internet driven, you know, so yeah. I applaud your children for not letting them being so exposed to this, but it's a fact of life. You know, all these kids, as soon as they come out, you know, they're seeing what's going on the internet, what goes on tablets, all the cell phones and so forth. So they have knowledge and information thrown at them not like anything else that we have ever seen, especially me. Yeah, you're talking about the my parents didn't have any cell phones or the internet. You know, they didn't have cable TV. They didn't have no remotes. I was my dad's remote. He'd say, "Son, go change the channel."
Yes.
Yeah. So that's
and it was black and white TV.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so this is a whole different world, and these kids that are coming up, you know, they are going to take this world to a new level. I am thoroughly convinced. Yeah, so it's up to us as parents and grandparents, since we're both grandparents, that we've got to bring them all kinds of other things to complement this so that they do become the greatest generation.
I totally and utterly agree. I mean, you know, the technology, that it's going to be just an extension of who they are. Already he knows the phone is a form of communication. So when he's going to do FaceTime, you know, he knows who you are. He's interacting with you. But also, you know, millions of pictures taken of him, and you can call him and you're turning around and you'll do a Zoolander. You know, he already knows, you know, this is him being caught on camera. And if you actually show him the picture of himself, he's fascinated. But they, you know, they've decided no TV and no handing him the phone, no apparatuses like that whatsoever, that they want to teach him about nature. And they want, but they do know that eventually he's going to get into, you know, the cyber world, and that it's very much part of his life. But they want him to have the balance first of everything else before he gets there. And I applaud that, because we do see so many children being handed the cell phone or tablet way too young. And it's been shown to actually have a detriment to their brain and their development, accessing it too much and too soon.
Well, it sounds like he already knows the technology is there to help you achieve your goals. So if he's already reacting to technology, mm-hmm. He knows that.
Yes.
And that's what it's for. And we have to take advantage of that. You know, the real backbone of this book is the theme is, at what age do you begin to take responsibility mm-hmm. for your actions? Mm-hmm. You know, is it 3 years old? Is it 13 years old? Is it 23 years old? I'm a baby boomer. I've got plenty of my contemporaries that are 63 that still don't take responsibility for their actions.
Yes.
You know, so if we can teach your grandchild and all my children to start taking responsibility for their actions, and they can use technology to help them achieve whatever goals that they think are great, you know, this is going to be interesting the way the world evolves.
Yeah, it certainly is. And of course, you know, we're right now watching a war unfold through social media. And through the power of social media, we're actually able to give a voice and be part of that empowerment against, you know, the giant. And so, it's, you know, social media and internet and apparatuses between this show, you know, on a computer, all of it has its place. But there is the balance in life. And as you said, when does a child take responsibility? Yeah, there are many, many people, especially baby boomers, who are still trying to kind of realize that their happiness lies within themselves, not an exterior thing. And I think a child needs to learn that too. He's already testing me, my little Roro, when he falls down and he cries, I will laugh and go, oh, and I get back up. He's testing me. Am I going to pick him up if I cry? Is this going to be some way of getting some attention? They're very, very astute, and they know how to mold you as a grandparent or as a parent. And so we can teach them some responsibility, I think, right kind of from the word go. They're not necessarily going to comprehend it, but it's going to become part of their pattern.
Well, we need to keep in mind that we, whether you're parents or grandparents, we are their role models.
Yes.
They will reflect what we do. So if
yes.
If I'm the mom and the dad, and I'm on my cell phone all day long, mm-hmm. and I am scrolling all day long, or I'm watching TV or the internet, I can tell you that they're going to reflect, and that's how we're going to be.
Yes.
You know, so I mean, think about it. If you're a parent, and you, to a 2, 3, 4, 5-year-old, and you say a cuss word, I can guarantee you that you're going to hear that back 3 or 4 times the rest of the day, you know, because they imitate you, because you're the role model. Now, if you happen to say a cuss word and slips out, what you want to do very quickly afterwards is kind of deflect it by start giving the words that they think are great, like bananas or
yes.
Dinosaurs or, you know, whatever it is that they can really relate to, so that they can not repeat that back to you. But you're the role model.
Yeah.
So if you sit down and read and do books and things like that, then they're going to do that. And that's why we have got to make sure that reading is a routine for all these real little kids. Because if you teach them young, then it should evolve as they get older.
Yeah, I'm a huge advocate for that. And my daughter doesn't really allow me to do too much posting of him, but there was one picture of him reading a book. And, you know, I know that a few minutes later he was trying to eat it. But, you know, at that moment, it was the most perfect picture of a child engrossed in a book. And so it's had a lot of feedback on it. And we need to encourage that. But going back to the swear word, I have to share a story. I was pregnant with my son, and my daughter, I think, was around 15 months old. And we owned a restaurant at the time. But I'm in a friend's yard and she's running around naked. It's summer, you know, cute. I'm sitting there going through the morning sickness and everything else. And she came over and she sat on my hand, little naked butt, sat on my hand and went, oh, shit. And kind of, I laughed and I thought she's picked this up from the restaurant, from one of the chefs or something like that. But then she got up and there in my hand was a pile of shit. So she at least knew what it was. And of course, I laughed so hard. What can you do at that point? But it's the environment in which the children are in. You can't always control it. But as you said, you can deflect it, right? You know, go do something. And that goes to when people are angry or upset. Your child will pick it up and immediately, this is a disequilibrium of my environment. Why is everybody upset? Have I done something wrong? And so it's, you have to deflect that and kind of go and do silly buggers or something like that just to kind of change it, because they will take it on, won't they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and going back to, we were talking about reading and why we need to read the children to deflect all those other things they're doing. I mean, there's all kinds of benefits to reading a child a book and becoming the role model, becoming the routine as they're doing it. You know, one of the big benefits is your chance to bond with the little kid. So in other words, you have a book, they're sitting on your lap, and you get a chance to spend some time together for 20 minutes, maybe each of reading the book, but it gives you an opportunity to really bond with these young kids, as you can learn from your grandson's going to turn one. You know, like, there's that special time that creates created by reading. Another reason why we have to sit down and read to these kids every single night, you know, it supports listening skills. Now, you and I both know, as we've grown older, that listening skills are the best skills that we have learned.
Yes, I mean, and how few people do listen.
Yeah. Listening skills gives us a chance to really, the more you listen, then you can feedback, you know, you can learn, you can ask questions, you can sell stuff if you want, as you learn the listening skills. But it gives them a chance, again, with us being the influence to offset all this great stuff they're learning off the internet, is to teach them how to listen. So that's another reason why we got to read books to these kids. Another reason we need to do it is because it helps develop a cognitive and languages. So you come across a book and you're reading a book and there's a word they don't understand, it gives you a chance to explain it. I mean, there's probably words in books that I don't understand. So, you know, it gives you a chance to interact with them and help with the development of them, understanding, you know, the different language and development of all that and all kinds of words. And then another reason is, yeah, it gives them a chance to have attention span. Again, that 20 minutes gives you a chance. The little kids, 2, 3, 4, they bounce off the wall all day long. Yes. You got them there for 20 minutes in your lap, and you create this attention span, helps them with concentration and self-discipline. So that's why we have to continue and make part of their routine and be the role model to teach them how to read.
Right. I think there's another step in that too, is the more you read to them and the more they become immersed in the story, the more, you know, I mean, they've been reading almost since he was born. And of course, he has no idea what's being read to him, but he's on the lap. And my son-in-law, you know, is a cosplayer. So he goes into all the roles and all the voices and everything else. He's not comprehending, but he is engaged. Right. And more he becomes engaged and more that comprehension is, the more and more his wonderment is. And the thing about reading is that you see a reflection of yourself in the characters, or you become one of the characters, and you allow your own imagination to go off wild and the ability to create and to dream and to wonder. It's instilling that wonderment in them, isn't it?
You hit upon absolutely the right reason why you're doing this. You know, it is necessary to teach children how to think. Not what to think.
Yes.
You know, we have to teach them how to think. So, you know, taking it a step further from what you just said, let's assume that you're going to have a reading with your child. You know, everybody's got about 20 books laid around their house, little children's books. Let the kid pick it out. Before you even said, let him pick up a book. Now, obviously, I want them to pick out my book, but there's 100 other great books out there that they can pick out. So let the child pick out the book. And then, you know, even before you start reading, we should be starting to question, because, again, we want to talk about teaching the children how to think. Is what do you think is going to happened in this book, even before you open the book. Just ask them that. So let them start thinking. Then once you're in the meeting, reading the book, you know, those are the questions that we should do that you just talked about. You know, who are the characters in this book? You know, what is the setting of this book? Have you ever seen that before? Have you related to it? You know, and then does anything in this book sound familiar to you? You know, it could be a fantasy book, but it could be something about a family. Let's find out if it sounds like to them. Let them kind of think, again, teaching them to think. And then when you're done with the book, you know, much like at every dinner time, we should be asking our kids, how was your day? What did you do? What was your favorite part of this book? Mm-hmm. Why was it your favorite part?
Yeah.
So it helps begin the questioning that we need for them to do in learning, you know, how to think. And so that's another reason that we've got to get books into their routines every night.
Yes. And you will find, you know, a kid will have like a favorite movie, a favorite book, and they want it 300 times. And then that's it. One day, you know, I don't want to read it anymore. I'm on to something else, right? But you could be reading the same book over and over and over again. But it's a challenge for you to deliver it in a different way, or even to ask the kid as they get older to interact with you, because they know the story by now, you know, and step into a character themselves. There's so many ways that you can go with it. And it's just make it fun. I know that, you know, both my daughter and her husband work, they're juggling times and time slot, et cetera. And he's not on a good sleeping pattern. So, you know, you're lucky if you get the hour out of him, because he's a boy on the go all the time. He's up at 5 o'clock every morning. So are they, right? You have to do your best to carve out the time. And it doesn't matter what he's in bed at 7, unless they're away. And they're up there at 6:30 reading books and getting him ready for bed. And it's make it a routine, make it a pattern, make it a part of your life. And then they take a couple of hours for themselves before they go to bed. You know, you just.
Yeah, you know, you talk about making it a part of your life. You know, the world's changed so much, at least in my particular case. I mean, when I was young, and I grew up in the 50s and 60s, you know, I grew up in a small town and my uncle was up the street and my grandmother was a couple blocks away. So they were always involved in my life. You know, so it was great. But as we grow older, and at least in my generation, you know, I have very few kids around. I mean, yeah. they're scattered all over. I've got, yeah. You know, I happen to be living here in Arizona in the U.S. and I've got a couple kids here, but I've got a couple of my other grandkids in Texas, a couple others in Florida. That's all over the country. And so the question becomes, with them scattered everywhere, how do you become part of their lives? Mm. What do you need to do? You know, how can you make a difference? Because again, little kids, 2, 3, and 4, they're not going to call you. You know, they got other things to do. You know, you've got to become part of their routine. So I'll tell you how we did it. And I'm sure your listeners can come up with other ideas too, how to stay in touch with some of the remote relatives they have, is that, you know, I had them here, as you were describing in the beginning, that I had all six of my grandkids here for 6 weeks because of the COVID. Mm-hmm. You know, we were all stuck together, which is great. And yeah, that's how I was able to write the book, because I had a chance to see them interact. And then the other four went home. And so, but the one thing I noticed is, for some reason, and it doesn't matter whether they're girls or boys, it's from 2 to 3, 4, 5, 6 years old, they all love dinosaurs. Now, it's their way. I found it. It's the way of little kids talking to each other, mm-hmm. even strangers. They start talking about dinosaurs. They all know about dinosaurs. Mm-hmm. You know, these guys, these little kids, they can say these real long names of these dinosaurs. You know,
they can.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I know the dinosaurs are small, medium, and large. You know, they tell me if they eat meat or who their mm-hmm. friends are. Mm-hmm. You know, they love dinosaurs. Mm-hmm. So we were able to pick up on that. We decided that once the other four went back to their homes, that we had to do something to keep them in touch with us. So we've got six dinosaurs here in the house. And since they were familiar with our house and our yard, we decided that every night we were going to have the dinosaurs do something different. So for instance, you know, one night they were in the refrigerator eating blueberries. Okay. The next night they were at the sink washing dishes with grandma with soap on their noses. Next night they were playing the piano. The next night they were walking up steps. So we had 50 different nights of them around the house of doing these things. So what happened for us to keep in contact with these little kids is we became part of the routine. You know, they took their bath, mom and dad would read them the books, and then they would say, you know, what are the dinosaurs doing tonight? Mm-hmm. Let's call. So they would call on my wife's iPhone so we could do FaceTime. And they say, where's Gramps? Where's Gramps? What are the dinosaurs doing tonight? So that gave us a chance to keep in touch with our kids.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure, again, your listeners have all kinds of other ways to do mm-hmm. it, but it's very important because in today's world, with so many broken families mm-hmm. and so many, you know, single parents, that it really does take a village to raise a child.
It always has. It always has. You know, we've lost contact with that. It became so insular. The family just stayed in on its own. And no, we need that extension. It's too much just for a couple of people to raise all these children on their own. We do need that village. We do need our community.
Oh, yeah, whether it's aunts and uncles, mm-hmm. grandma and grandpa, friends, and, you know, we have to, because it just takes so much. Because, again, all this great information they're learning through the internet and their iPhones and so mm-hmm. forth, we just got to be able to complement that so that when it's all said and done, that they have a complete education on how to grow up and what to do with it.
You know, and, you know, we've got this thing called Zoom, which is what we're on at the present moment. And, you know, it could even be, you know, the daughter or the son calling grandma and saying, I need some time. Okay, so, you know, grandma could say to the kid, okay, I want you to put a blanket all around you, get nice and comfy, and then I'm going to tell you a story, right? And they forget that there's a screen in between. Because there is that energetic connection, and grandma is talking to them. They're all snuggly as if they were on grandma's lap. There are ways that we can do it. If you've got a tablet, you can take it around the house and show them things and say things. It's being interactive. You know, it's just doing something outside of any box. No, it's not the same as it used to be. But that means we've got to get creative and create different ways of doing things. But engagement is really, really important.
You know, one of the biggest issues, at least I can see with baby boomers, is there's too many of us in my generation that really don't want to get engaged. You know, they have said, I raised the great kid, my kids raised that kid, they'll take care of it. I got other things to do.
Yeah.
Now, we got to realize that you only have 18 years to influence a child. Probably less once they get into the teens, but there's only a few years. And these decades go by quickly. 10 years goes by before you know it, and they're gone. And at the same time, so they're only young ones. We've got to be able to step in there, step up, and then get involved with them. You know, the future is just so unpredictable today. I mean, look at this COVID. Look how many of our friends have died.
Yeah.
You know, when you look at the numbers for people 65 years old and older, there's 16% of the population, yet 75% of the COVID deaths came from 65 mm-hmm. and older. Mm-hmm. So we're losing our friends and right and left on top of with COVID on top of everything else that they're normally mm-hmm. going to die from. So we have got to be able to jump in there and do this and do it now. It's something that we can't wait. It's got to right. happen now. You know, what has happened with this pandemic, which has really added so much more to the upbringing of kids, is kids are reading less today than they were before. You know, according to the United Nations Education, Science, and Culture Organization, I think you call it UNESCO, 584 million children worldwide, around the world, are experiencing reading difficulties. Okay, think of that number, 584 million.
Yes.
Just before the pandemic, that number is 460 million. So there's been a rise of 20% in the world of kids that are having reading difficulties. You know, that wipes out two decades of educational gains that this world has made. So we've got to get in there and get involved to make up for that. Yeah. I mean, the Stanford Graduate School of Education just released a study saying that the second and third graders reading fluency is 30% behind of what was expected in a typical year. So, you know, what happens, you know, when you're going from third and fourth grade, you go from learning to read to reading to learn. Mm. So if you don't know, have got the skills to go from learning to read, you're not going to be able to go reading to learn things. So we've all got to step in on it. And that's why it takes a village more today from this pandemic than Ezra ever has, ever, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I've had a few educators on, and they're saying that it's quite despairing, you know, of how few kids, and, you know, especially teen kids or even postgraduate kids, that just won't read. You know, the trouble is with the apparatuses we have today, there has been a huge thing about the attention span, or if you haven't got them in 2 seconds, you haven't got them. And what we're doing is we're dumbing people down. We're just, if it's not instant gratification, then they have no attention for it. And that is, you know, one of the negative sides of all of these wonderful internet things. I can just ask Google, I don't need to think for myself. And it's, there is no depth. There is no depth to wanting to know more. It reminds me of, I don't know if it was Twilight Zone or Outer Limits, but it was around a guy that couldn't have this chip in his head. When everybody had a chip in their head that was associated with the computer, so they didn't need to retain any information. They just asked the computer. This was before Google came up, by the way, right? And they considered this guy dumb. But nobody was paying attention to the computer. And when the computer broke down, nobody knew how to fix it because the knowledge hadn't been passed on. And so they all became dumb and he became the teacher, right? And there's a real lesson to be learnt there. And that lesson is don't, this is wonderful, all of these apparatus, they're tools. You have to have that basic ability to search out knowledge for yourself. And that comes in reading, being inquisitive, you know, wanting to inquire to know more. And if we don't have that, the other skill that is being lost right now is writing, is literally handwriting. People are losing that. Let's get our kids right from young doing these things, that they want to do these things and they want to continue these things. So they actually bring it back into the school as something cool.
Yeah, reading creates a curiosity that builds imaginations.
Yes.
And that's what we've got to do. Create yes. that curiosity.
Yes. Yes. And with that reading, you know, that my kids used to do plays all the time. And so they had a box of clothes, and then it would be, okay, we're going to do this play, and out would come all this imagination, and it's from something they've either read or something they've seen, and be very, very creative sometimes. You know, you've got to look at it, and oh, that's really good, you know, because they've pulled together all that wonderful imagination, and it's wonderful to see where they go, you know, what they think up of. They become our teachers if we're willing to learn along with them, right?
Yeah, you know, going back to, you were talking about the questions, you know, that we should be asking our kids so that we can teach them how to think. Yeah. One of the greatest questions I think that we as a society could ask every kid, and we can start asking it now, is what did you do today that was nice to someone else? You can think about that. Yes. Yeah. And again, you know, in my book, the kids are fighting over their toys and their trucks and all that. And so, but if you say to a 2 or 3 or 4 year old, what did you do today that was nice to someone else? Initially, they're going to look at you. What are you talking about? Well, yeah, you could share your trucks. That would be nice to someone else. You know, and then I think if you ask that to a child every day, by the 4th or 5th day, they're going to say, you know, I need to impress my mom and dad. What did I do that was nice? You know, was it, did I open the door for someone? Did I walk an old lady across the street? You know, what is it that I could do? But can you imagine this world, especially in today's chaotic world, that if everyone of this generation thought about what did you do today that was nice to someone else, how we would change the entire society?
Yes, absolutely. Narcissism is on the rise. And narcissism comes from children that actually haven't been taught empathy or kindness or caring. They're still in that zone, me, myself. Everything is, I've got to be satisfied. I don't care who gets hurt as long as I'm okay. And we, you know, our children are born that way because that's how we find out they're wet, they're hungry, they're this, they're that. They're only thinking of themselves, obviously. It is up to us to teach them how to think for other, caring about other people. And if you do make it a game, if you do make it something that, you know, they don't necessarily get a reward other than that's wonderful. What are you going to do tomorrow? And allow them to think up of something they're going to do tomorrow. Because every child loves praise. They like to know they're doing something right. So let's reward the right.
Exactly. You hit right on it.
Why about turning three? I don't want to turn three. Is there a difference between turning two and three that I still want to be the baby and get the baby attention?
Yes, you know, that really is, that's it. It's like, when do we start to hold you responsible? Is it, in our case, I'm finding that three-year-olds are the ones we're starting to say, hey, take a little responsibility. You know, I'm working on a book called I Don't Want to Turn Four. Mm-hmm. My oldest grandchild, Olivia, who was 8 when we wrote the book, just turned 9. And she came to me last week. She says, you know, Gramps, I have an idea for a book. I don't want to turn 10. Mm-hmm. I said, what do you mean you don't want to turn 10? And she says, well, you know, I gotta start worrying about driving pretty soon. And then driving, I said, that's another 7 years away. Why would you even worry about that now? She says, you know, and I gotta start working about picking out a college. You know, where am I going to go? And I said, that's 9 years away. Why are you worrying about that? So, you know, I think at every age, you know, I don't want to turn 40. I don't want to turn 50. You know, at every age, we are sitting there with a decision. You know, how do we look at the past and how should we look towards the future?
I agree. That also comes back very much to the environment. If the emphasis is on, we've got to start thinking about colleges, or, you know, what happened, you know, when they want to drive one day, we put the pressure on these children to worry about this. In fact, you know, I've got a show out last week, you know, I do a little Pearls of Wisdom show of my own, and it's about worry, you know, and we all get to, you know, something to worry about, you know, and worry, what do we worry? We worry about something that we feel powerless to do, or we don't know how to address it. You know, we're worried about the unknown. But if we could teach our children that, yeah, worry is going to come up, but what can you do about it in the now? Are there any seeds you can plant that will grow, that will be a solution down the road? Or if you can't do anything about it now, why worry about it now? Why are our children worrying? And because they end up being worrying adults, what do worrying adults do? If you're in that state of worry, anxiety, and depression, you get dis-ease, you get disease, and you kill any form of creativity, and you shut yourself down, and you're living a really miserable life.
Well, it goes back to one of the first things we were talking about is we are the role model.
Yes.
If we sit around and we worry, I can tell you those kids are going to be
worried. Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah. And, you know, I also think candor. You know, I had round table. We always had discussions at night. My kids came home for tea and they could bring friends over and, you know, for dinner, who's staying for dinner. And, you know, if they brought up the things like, Mom, what's a homosexual? You're going to answer, right? Obviously, to the age they are, the best understanding that they're going to comprehend at that age. But it's, don't deny the question. Don't, you know, change the subject. They've asked the question, they're inquiring about it. You don't want them to hear something different from someone else. So address it. And I think the permission for our children to be heard, to feel comfortable enough to ask questions, to feel not belittled or reprimanded for asking the question, is going to build a much healthier adult down the road.
Well, you know, kids are so honest.
Yes.
And that's one of the great treats and that we have. And we tend to get them out of that honesty. For example, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I went to my granddaughter Grace's 3rd birthday party. And, you know, we're sitting there and she looks at me and she says, Gramps, you got a big stomach. Yeah, nobody's going to tell me that.
Yeah, I know.
Is it bigger than your daddy? She says, oh, yeah, you got a big stomach. You know, that's honesty.
Yes. Yeah.
She's not going to tell me that when she's 8 years old.
No.
Because we've taught her to think differently. But yeah. Think how honest these kids are. And that's why this is the time to get to them, because they believe in honesty.
Well, I have a same daughter. She's always been the one to put me in kind of moments of like, you know, is there a hole to swallow me up? We're in line at the community to sign up for her preschool again. And there is a person of color in front of me. And she goes, Mommy, why doesn't that person wash? Right. So you just want the world to swallow you up. The guy turned around and was very, and he said, don't worry about it. I haven't heard that one before. And of course, I'm just, you know. And then we're at an event, a performance, and a person, I don't know if he was a dwarf or a midget, but he was a small person. And Oh, she goes, Mommy, there's a budget person next to us. And he said, I haven't been called that before. Yeah, I'm saving on height, you know. But she's been the one to put me in that position. And it's like, kids do say the darndest things. And it's, you know, we do need to address it that there is a different way of saying that. And that might hurt someone's feelings. You know, we have to address it at that time of the correct way to say it. But we can't reprimand them for saying it, because they're speaking their honesty, their perception.
Yeah, I mean, and we just need to build on it. And that's part of my book. You know, the way it works in my book is they do come together. The father gets all the six cousins together, and they sit in a circle, talk about how they can start sharing. And Olivia says, well, we need to give all of our toys to the homeless kids downtown. And they all agree to do that. And so, you know, they're influencing each other. And those are the kinds of events that we as parents and grandparents need to make sure happens in our kids' lives as well.
Yeah. The thing about the art of giving, it's also receiving. When you know that you've brought a smile to someone or you've made a difference in someone's life, there's such a lot of gratification in giving that you do receive. You receive joy from the giving. And if our children could learn that beautiful vibration very, very early, then it would be something they'll always want to do.
What a way to end.
We're not ended yet, love. We're not, okay. You're in a hurry? I want more from you. So you've got the one book. You've got the next one coming up is Turning Four. So what's the difference between the 3 and the 4-year-old?
It starts to, interesting that you say that in what we've been talking about, because they start to learn from their parents how not to tell the truth.
So that
opens up a whole other can of worms.
And how do we address that? Because, well, mama told a lie.
Exactly. You're the role model.
So, you know, how do we say to them, yeah, that's wrong. Mommy's bad. You know, because, yeah, how do we address that? Yes, it's a spotlight back on us, right? But there are some things some parents do have to kind of withheld.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting. We were talking about discipline and how discipline in my generation is so different than discipline in these generations. You know, now, if you want to discipline a child, you send them in a corner and it works because they're away from their friends. They're looking at the wall. You know, when I was my age, they were chasing around with belts. But you know, in this generation, they're doing that. And so, you know, I was telling you, I was at Grace's party, and she and her brother, who's a year and a half older than she is, you know, they were sitting there and they were starting to fight over these trucks that she had gotten for her birthday. And she looks at him and she says, I need my space. And she actually gets up and walks to the other side of the sofa. And he looks at her and he says, you know, I need my space too. And he walks to the other side of the sofa. Now, they didn't learn that on the internet.
No.
I am sure that their mother was with them and got frustrated one time and says, I need my space, and walks away.
Yeah.
And then they picked up on that. So those are the kinds of things that we teach our kids. And so you're right. It's how you act and then how you interpret it. In that particular case, it worked out great. She was frustrated. I need my space. But now the kids understand that if we're having trouble, let me walk away. So there's all kinds of ways to teach them.
I have somebody on last week from you, wonderful Duarte Basillo, and she teaches kids yoga and meditation and how to handle stress and how to center themselves and how to take that space. And it's, why do we wait for adults to teach them that? Why can't we teach them these skills right from the word go? I need space, or I need to calm down, or the techniques, I need to take a breath, right? And honor that, because these are skills that then they can use throughout their lives. Very often we kind of wait until they're older before we teach them things. And it's, you know, especially at teenage years, you know, I call that the exorcist time, where the head starts spinning around, you know? And can you tell a teenager anything? No, you are archaic. You know nothing. They know everything. You know how hard it is. So you want to teach them skills that they can use lifelong, as early as possible and respect their voice, respect their boundaries that they set for themselves, which means we've got to observe and listen to our own children.
Yeah, going back to this skill that we learn reading books,
yes,
how to listen.
Yes.
How to listen to these kids.
Yes. And, you know, it's, I don't know about, you know, I'm 67, born 54. And I was a very sickly child. So I was in bed a great deal alone. We didn't have TV, didn't even have radio, you know, in there. So I had to use my imagination and go places because, you know, I'd be alone for so long. And I was a younger child than my brother and sister that were already at boarding school as I was growing up. And so it was, I didn't really have that kind of community. I was always a very solo child. And I would have play dates and things like that. That was very nice. But I can't remember kind of like what our kids have today, where they can go to a preschool and then go to a play school and they can go to other things where they learn to play and interact with one another. And I think as soon as we can get our children, which my daughter's trying to do now with various play groups, of start interacting with other kids, learning to play, learning to be soft and kind, don't just whack, you know. And our kids are never too young to learn. Even if they don't understand, you're introducing a pattern of, you know, that's not good. Yes, this is good. And it just becomes patterns that they just repeat. As they grow older, they begin to understand it, but they're never too young to start learning things.
Yeah, and they will learn. I mean, for my wife is on her way right now to go pick up two of our grandkids here in town because we're babysitting this weekend because their parents are going away for their anniversary. So, you know, and we've learned from babysitting with them in the past what we should do and not do. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, you know, we had them about 6 weeks ago for the weekend. And so, one of the great things about being a grandparent is you can give them back. So
yes.
You can have lots of fun and give them back. And because they do have these memories, the things yes. You were talking about, yeah. They remember all kinds of things, good and bad. So I mean, we had a great time with them. You know, we went swimming, we went and played soccer, you know, we watched great movies, we went to the museum, we did all the great things that grandparents do with children. But on Saturday night, Levi, who is six, is picky eater. And grandma said to him, Levi, you're going to eat this. And he says, no, I don't want to eat this. And she says, you're going to eat this. You're not going to be able to watch television the rest of the night. And so he didn't eat it. He didn't watch TV.
Right.
So we gave the kids back to their parents the next day. And Olivia said, oh, we had a great time. We went to the museum. I did this. We swam. But the only thing Levi remembered of that whole great weekend is,
right,
grandma made me eat something I don't want and I don't like. And I can guarantee you he's going to remember that when he's 30 years old.
I know.
You know, those yeah. are the kinds of memories we create. So she's on her way to pick him up again for this weekend. And I'm thinking, okay, what are we going to do? Are we going to have another issue with we're going to do something he's going to remember the rest of his life? Or can we do things that they're going to remember with a positive attitude, but we can also teach him at the same time?
But I think it's also asked the question, well, what do you like to eat? I mean, we're imposing food upon them that maybe it's just not their cup of tea. They are allowed to have a preference. And, you know, when we grew up, we ate the food that was in front of us, right? But
oh,
it's different times. I mean, my grandchild has been brought up completely vegan. And, you know, he's sampling the food right now, what he likes and what he doesn't like. And I think we do actually sometimes have to pay respect. Okay, I'm not going to cook anything different, but out of what I'm cooking, what will you eat? Can yeah. I add something? Let them have that voice. So it isn't one of those, I don't want to go to my grandparents because they don't give me what I like to eat.
They starve me.
Yes. Because, I mean, they have their own taste buds. They know what they like and what they don't like. And I think, you know, the past generations of children should be seen and not heard. No, we need to listen to our children. I have a series called the Forgotten Children series, which is, you know, it's about the children that have been abused, have been neglected, not been heard, not been given permission to be. They end up being the dysfunctional adults. And those dysfunctional adults are making a dysfunctional society. So the more we actually give our children a voice, the more we allow them to be creative and explore and feel that it's okay for them to do so. It's okay for them to inquire. It's okay for them to have an opinion. It's okay for them to explore different aspects of themselves, the more we support who they are and who they're grown to grow up to be. So I think we need to change the way we look at raising our children and give them more respect for their own journey of life, and not impose what we think they should be doing, but rather listen and observe and watch and nurture and guide them, but allow them to discover who they really are, what they're here for.
Yeah, when you think that when you love, you will teach others how to love.
Exactly.
And we just need to push that on to these kids. Let them see how much we really love and want them to succeed.
Yes, exactly. Because that's really a bottom line is what a child really needs, is they just need to know they're loved. It doesn't matter if you agree with them or you're reprimanding them over something. That's got nothing to do with how you love them. It's just something you don't like of what they've done. And they need to know that there's a difference there.
Right.
Otherwise, it becomes, you don't love me. Well, so the second book comes out when?
We'll see. We're working on it now. It'll probably be at the end of this year. So,
and
I
how
don't
do people get hold of the first book?
Oh, you can buy it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble, about 100 other sites on the internet. I Don't Want to Turn Three, or come to my site, which is GrampsJeffrey.com. And I can do that. Or if any of your listeners want to continue this conversation, please have them email me. It's GrampsJeffrey@gmail.com. I'd love to keep talking about this.
As I said, we are at a time that our children are navigating a path that we never had. Even my millennial kids didn't have all of these apparatuses at their fingertips. And most likely, our children growing up will end up with a chip in their head. You know, that's the way it's going. How do we keep them grounded and really understand what's important, which means respecting nature, respecting each other, having a sense of value, most certainly a sense of kindness, a sense of wonderment. How do we keep them engaged and grounded with that while this other world is blowing up? You know, and that means blowing up as far as where technology is going to take us. Because if they lose sight of all of the other, the reading, the listening, the paying attention, the being connected, then it doesn't matter what the technology is, we've lost them.
Exactly. So what we have to do as adults is go back to our roots.
Yes.
Get them outside to play.
Yes. You know, in the mud.
Them, yeah, exactly. Let them get dirty.
Yes.
You know, get them out of the house. Yes. And balance that. Again, what they're learning is unprecedented with any generation we've ever been exposed to. So let them continue learning that. But you make sure that we spend hours a day getting to do the basic things that we did when we were growing up.
Exactly. The fundamentals, the roots, and the foundation. If that foundation is strong, the abilities of kindness, caring, wonderment, exploration is there, and appreciation and gratitude, which definitely needs to be instilled in them as well, then whatever they're going to morph into, they'll always have that core foundation which to build from, which is what we need in our youth and what we need in our adults, right? So, you know, we don't want the TV or the computer to be the babysitter or the phone to be the babysitter. You know, it's great for education. It's great for exploration. It's great for adventurism, but let's teach them the fundamentals first.
Amen.
Thanks so much for sharing with us here today. I think it's a great topic. I don't want to turn three. Yeah, I don't want to turn 70. But, you know, hopefully it's going to happen if I'm lucky, right? So, you know, the thing is, I think also celebrate every birthday, no matter how old we are, because and appreciate, especially in this last 2.5 years, right, that don't take life for granted. Always be grateful for what we have. Then if we live in gratitude, we won't always live in lack.
Exactly. Thank you so much, Sarah. This was a lot of fun.
So folks, remember, read to your kids. Let your kids want to read back to you when they get there. Let them be a part of the book. Have them even writing. Don't forget, the art of writing is going as well, and drawing, hands on, hands in, participating in. But the art of reading is going to open up their world considerably. So please put the phone down, put the computer down, spend some time with your children and teach them about life from the ground up. Until next time, bye for now. We hope that you enjoyed the show right here at selfdiscoverymedia.com. Please tune in to our selfdiscoverymedia.com/shows and you will see all the other genres that we have from you. Every week on Tuesday, we bring you new shows from illuminating people. If you know someone that should be interviewed, please contact us at info@selfdiscoverymedia.com. Now stay tuned for your next show.